This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here are headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. Senator John McCain and his running mate Sarah Palin campaigned in Cedar Rapids, Iowa today. Senator McCain said if he were president, he would fire the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Meanwhile, Senator Barack Obama, the Democratic presidential nominee, plans to campaign in New Mexico today. And a little more than a year after the bridge collapse in Minneapolis, the city has a high-tech replacement. Traffic was initially heavy on the I-35W, but loosened up quickly during the morning rush hour. The new bridge has five lanes in each direction. The old one had three. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday. Ira Flato will be here with a look at amateur astronomy, plus the science of chili peppers, from growing them to eating them, and why some of us can't get enough of the heat. That's tomorrow's Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. Not so very long ago, flight attendants were called stewardesses, and it used to be a glamorous job. Not so much these days. 9/11 put new emphasis on security, and it's been a very long time since economy passengers had to choose between the filet and the lobster. How do flight attendants balance security, flight delays, overhead baggage, customer service, crazy work schedules, and air rage, all while pouring hot coffee in turbulence? Michelle Higgins writes the practical travel column for the New York Times and decided to find out by doing the job herself for a couple of days. She joins us in just a moment. We want to hear from flight attendants today. Call and tell us your story about your job and how it's changed. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Michelle Higgins wrote a story about her experience for the New York Times called Flying the Unfriendly Skies. She joins us from our bureau in New York. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And I was surprised to read in your piece that flight attendants think the worst job is up in first class.
That's right. It's actually harder to work first class. You would think that it might be easier because there's fewer people up there, but you're doing a lot more work in terms of serving hot meals and, you know, getting passenger drinks and dealing with some demanding passengers in some cases.
Indeed, you spent part of your time, and you were only a flight attendant, for a couple of days, but you spent part of your time in first class with a demanding passenger.
Yes, passenger 4B, as I like to refer to him. He was just kept barking out drink orders until he finally passed out, and we were more than happy to see him fall asleep at the end of that.
And it's interesting. You must have got. I know you went through some training for this. You had the cooperation of American Airlines.
Yes. Yeah, so, like most domestic carriers, hiring at American has come to a virtual standstill. So, the only flight attendant training sessions going on right now are their annual refresher courses in emergency preparedness. So that meant I had to learn the lessons typically taught to new hires, like the ins and outs of meal and beverage service on the job rather than at school. But the training was really interesting because I got to go to their headquarters in Dallas and see their pretty amazing facilities where they have aircraft fuselages scattered throughout a large room, and flight attendants go and kind of refresh on emergency exit door procedures and putting out a fire on board the plane, all really interesting stuff.
Those doors, you write, are heavier than you think they are.
Yes. I guess when the adrenaline's pumping, you'd be able to get it up and over your shoulder, but wouldn't be able to lift it over my head, that's for sure.
The security and safety has always been the primary responsibility of flight attendants, but security, obviously, since 9/11, has changed the nature of the job.
Yes, I wasn't actually allowed to participate in the flight attendant security training for sensitive security reasons, I imagine. But I did interview flight attendants about it, and many of them said it's really at the forefront now of their training. They're taught self-defense, that mallets used for breaking up ice on board can be used as weapons if necessary, and, you know, that they constantly have to be out on the outlook for suspicious activity on board these days.
And we don't think of that as part of the job because we're usually fighting with the guy across the aisle for space in the overhead bin.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of the flight attendants are often thought of as, you know, simply there for customer service, as wait staff in a sense. But their primary duty is safety and security on board.
I always thought you weren't allowed to wear the official American Airlines uniform. You said you approximated one from Land's End catalog. But nevertheless, I thought they should wear striped shirts because in a lot of ways they're referees.
That's right. You know, some of the flight attendants I talk to in dealing with passengers, they say that they kind of describe their job as being one where they constantly had to calibrate the mood of passengers. One flight attendant that I talked to said, you know, he'll be a teacher, he'll be a pastor, he'll be a counselor, he'll be a mediator, all on board one flight, you know, dealing with people with the overhead fight. For overhead bin space and listening to people vent their frustration about the security procedure, because flight attendants are often the people that the passengers see that work for the airline and have time to talk to them, whereas, you know, when they're rushing from gate to gate, they may not come into contact with an airline personnel.
And I must say that I was trapped on the ground in Providence this past summer for 5 hours on the tarmac. And they were the flight attendants were great because I thought we were going to have a pretzel riot.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. When I was on board, that was one of the things that surprised me. I had to say no a lot to passengers because there were a lot of things that passengers were used to getting that just aren't stocked on board an airline anymore, like, you know, not enough blankets or pillows or, you know, even food for sale. There were only 2 cookies stocked for the flight that I was on, which was a 737 aircraft with more than 100 passengers on it.
So even if you wanted to spend the $3 for the cookie, they were sold out in the first 5 seconds.
Exactly.
See if we get some callers in on the conversation. Our guest, Michelle Higgins, author of Flying the Unfriendly Skies. She's with us from our bureau in New York. She writes the Practical Traveler column for the New York Times. And let's begin with Allison. Denver, Colorado is where Allison is calling from.
Hi.
Hi, Allison.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good because I'm not working today.
And are you a flight attendant?
I am a flight attendant. I work for a regional airline. And that's a whole different ballgame from working for the big, you know, the majors, if you will.
And how is it different?
Well, it's different in the way that you often work 14-hour days and only get paid for 6 hours. And we get hassled by the TSA people probably more than the average passenger that comes through.
I'm in the passenger line. I see you guys sailing through security.
Well, it's true that there is sort of a pass to the front of the line because we're generally running to planes to, you know, get the flight out on time. But the truth of the matter is that we're not even getting paid until the plane is moving.
And so you're as frustrated as we are when it's sitting there at the gate endlessly.
Correct.
Has the attitude, because of the deregulation, because of fuller flights, because of overbooking, because of all of those things, are passengers testier than they have been in the past?
You know, some are and some aren't. Some are very, I don't know if you want to say good travelers, that they understand that, you know, pretty much when you sign up these days, you just have to kind of go with what comes. Sometimes the weather isn't going to cooperate. Sometimes the forces of nature are going to step in. Sometimes the airplanes have mechanicals. People often don't think about how many miles an airplane flies every day. And, you know, if you drove your car that often, you would definitely want to have it serviced by a mechanic. And so
check the oil filter every once in a while. Yeah.
Sure. It's safety first.
Some of Allison's complaints, Michelle Higgins, you were on, obviously, American, one of the major carriers, but certainly that part about not getting paid till the airplane moves, that sounds familiar.
Yes, that's, you know, that was really interesting to learn about the flight attendants. You know, their schedules are often, you know, wrecked by the delays and you know, what passengers experience, and you might assume that they're getting paid for the entire amount, you know, the entire time that they're spending with you, both on board and perhaps getting to and from the airport. But that's not necessarily the case. There's, you know, they're paid for the flight time, the actual flight time when they push back from the gate, and then they're given a small per diem. $1.50 is about the average, you know, for the majors anyway. And you know, in addition to that, but they're really hardworking people, and the average flight attendant salary today is only around $33,500 a year, according to the Flight Attendant Association.
Allison, does that number sound about right to you?
Well, yes and no. It's a little misleading because when you say the average flight attendant, it sounds like everybody makes the same thing or that's what you start at. But most flight attendants start at $15 an hour. and they probably don't get paid based on a 40-hour work week, even though they may work that or more.
So you're making a lot less when you start out, and you have to get a lot of seniority before you're making that $32,000 a year.
Correct. And your schedule is very terrible. And, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, well, since 9/11 and since all of the gas has been going up and the economy has been tanking and we've been taking pay cuts and our schedules have been getting way worse, often we'll spend like 4 hours in the middle of the day in an airport when we're not getting paid and we're in uniform, and that just means we start early, we end late, and we might only have 9 hours on the ground, which is really not enough to sleep, much less feed yourself or refresh yourself.
And not exactly laying back on the beach with a margarita and a box of bonbons.
Not that.
No. Allison, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate the insight.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I was just summoning up an image from your piece, Michelle Higgins, this idea that, you know, the layovers were the glamorous part of the job that in the old days when they were called stewardesses, they had a Bowen in every city.
Right. One of the, you know, it's not as much fun as it's been depicted, you know, the nostalgia of the past anymore. So one of the flight attendants that I met kind of put it best. She said, who would have thought after 30 years that we'd be flying a 7-Eleven? You know, she said that they used to serve omelets and crepes for breakfast, but now it's would you like to buy stackable chips or a big chocolate chip cookie for $3? So I think that really kind of sums up the change over the years for them. And, you know, Allison talked a lot about the you know, kind of the new challenges that they're facing and the cuts that they've taken. You know, depending on the airline, attendants earn between 7% and 20% less today than before 9/11 because they've taken pay cuts to keep the airlines in business in some cases.
We're talking with Michelle Higgins of the New York Times. She writes the Practical Traveler column. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get Angela on the line. Angela calling from Sacramento in California.
Hi. Michelle, I wanted to tell you I'm a fellow travel writer, and I had actually admonished my blog readers yesterday to read your article because I think it was very well written and is an insight into the travel industry that most people don't even think about. I have to say I see travelers being rude to flight attendants all the time, and it just breaks my heart because clearly they do what they can do. They can't help the weather. They can't help other delays. They can't help traffic that's stacked up. And they certainly can't help it when there are only two cookies on board a flight. So...
Well, thank you. You probably, too, generally write about the challenges passengers go through with, you know, getting to and from their destination. So this was, for me, a fun story because it was a look at the other side of air travel, kind of a chance to see what the airline personnel have to put up with from us these days.
Absolutely. You know, I've sat next to drunk passengers, and I think about all the kinds of things that flight attendants have to deal with, sick children and sick adults and, you know, all of the kinds of things that we take for granted. You know, they are the nurses and the pastors and like you said, the teachers and everything else. And then they have to worry about our safety as well. So I have to say, I have never had a flight attendant with whom I was dissatisfied. And personally have written several letters to major airlines and other airlines, regional airlines as well, about flight attendants who I felt like did an incredible job.
That's good to hear.
Angela, thanks very much for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Interesting, you said earlier that the first-class cabin was thought to be the worst place to work. The best flight to work, you said, was the early morning flight filled with people in business working on their laptops or just dozing on the flight between Dallas and New York.
Some of the early morning flights are great to work and also, you know, great to be a passenger on because oftentimes the, you know, the ripple effect that occurs when flights are delayed affects the afternoon flights more often. So there's a better chance that your flight won't be delayed. You know, people are tired. You know, they may have gotten up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to the airport and get through security and get on the flight. So they're usually pretty easygoing.
Let's get Jerry on the line. Jerry with us from O'Fallon in Missouri.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Jerry.
This walking and talking antiques that started 30 years ago in the airline business, and it was quite a bit different. I worked for a regional carrier, then later for a large international carrier that no longer exists. But we used to serve full meals between, say, St. Louis and Minneapolis, which is about an hour and 20 minutes. But the upside of that was, as an employee, we had what were called duty and trip rigs. So if you would, say, go out someplace and get snowed in for every 3.25 hours that you were gone, you would get paid an hour of flight time. And if you really did your homework when you were bidding, you could, you know, accomplish a month's work in 12 to 15 days. And I know from later going into management and staying in the business up until a few years ago that it's been, at least for the employees, kind of a downward slide.
Yeah, some of the flight attendants I talked to said that, you know, while some of those perks may exist on paper, it's actually harder to use them because, you know, as passengers are experiencing, the flights are packed fuller, so there aren't empty seats for them to get to do, you know, to
take
bring their family
that,
for
yeah.
a free flight, for instance.
And to give an idea of the economy, back in the late 70s, at least the original carrier I worked for, if we had an average daily load factor of 57% or higher, we were making money. So yes, if you were flying on a pass, chances are that you'd get to where you wanted to go. And it was a different era. Nowadays, people work almost literally all the time. But, you know, back in the day, even business travelers would get on the flight with a big, thick Stephen King book and have a couple martinis and kick back because you didn't have a laptop to work on.
And Terry, let me ask you, how many flight attendants per passenger in your day?
Well, we had to have, initially, our aircraft seated 100 passengers. The law is you have to have one for every 50 or fraction thereof. And when we went up to 110, we would have three flight attendants for 110 passenger seat aircraft.
And you write,
it would get, for a full flight, it could get pretty stressful, but you just kind of learn to go with it. And we managed to get it done.
Terry, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. And Michelle Higgins, thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle Higgins is the Practical Traveler. She writes that column for the New York Times, joined us today from NPR's Bureau in New York. Her piece for the Times last weekend was called Flying the Unfriendly Skies. Tomorrow, Ira Flato will be here with Science Friday. I'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. And one last check on Wall Street, the industrial average, Dow Jones industrial average up 351 points. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.